We're holding the second to last line of your Aleph Amud Beis. We're going to now be dealing with a topic which is not directly related to Masechta Nazir, but after we go work through the topic, then we're going to bring in our Mishnah as a counterproof for something that we say in the Sugya. So the Gemara says, Amud of Yitzchak by Yosef, Amud of Yechanan. Ha'oim of the Shluchai. Suppose a person says to his Shliach, say the Kaddish the Isha Stam. He said to the Shliach, go be the Kaddish me a woman Stam, and he didn't specify a particular woman. So now, what happens if the Shliach died, and we don't know whether he was Makadish anyone, and if so, who it was? The result is, also b'chol ha'noshim sheba'olam, the Meshaleach, the one who sent the Shliach, is going to be also to marry every woman in the world, and we're going to qualify that soon and say, but not necessarily everyone, but whatever. But to start with, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, because chazaka Shliach osa shlichusay, we have a chazaka that a Shliach accomplishes his shlichus, so therefore, if we send him, then we have a chazaka that tells us that he probably accomplished his shlichus, and he was in fact Makadish, a woman. So the kivin delay parish lay, and since the Meshaleach did not clarify which one he should be Makadish, hola yoda hey me who Kaddish lay, then he has no idea which one. Now, the problem is not, of course, the problem is not having a second wife. Before Chayim Yabbe Negershim, that wasn't the problem. The problem is that when you're Makadish a woman, you become usur in her close relatives, her mother, her daughter, her sister. So a couple of other relatives. So now the problem is any woman that you might be Makadish in the future might conceivably be the mother of the woman who your Shliach was already Makadish for you, or her daughter, or her sister, or her grandmother, etc. So therefore you wouldn't be able to. Now Tosfos over here and in other places in Chas discusses this point. Tosfos starts by bringing up the question, if that's the problem, then never mind the case where you sent a shliach. What about a regular case? What about, for example, you could have the other way around. Suppose that you're going to be Makadish, a woman, and what happens? She might have already been Niskadish through a shliach, and now you're going to marry her, and she's already Niskadish to somebody else. So now you have, first of all, Tosfos says, Rabbi Natam says that a woman herself is believed to say that she wasn't Makadish. So that would answer that. Fine, you're Makadish, a woman. She tells you, I was never Makadish before. I never accepted Kedushin from a Shliach. So therefore, we're good. On the other hand, not everybody agrees with Rabbeinu Tam on that. And Tosfos says, even Rabbeinu Tam himself, what about a Katana? She may not know if her father accepted Kedushin on her behalf. So Tosfos over here learns that actually, when we say over here that he'd be also B'cholam Noshim Shaba Olam, we don't mean he'd be also Darad Isa. It's true we're saying we have a chazaka shliach osa shlichusay. On the other hand, against that, we have the fact that most women in the world, are not the one that your shliach was makadish, or a relative of one who your shliach was makadish. So, in general, when you're makadish, a woman, out of the blue, most women are not makodish. So you have no problem. Here, what it is when we say over here that he's usur, would be a knas, because he acted carelessly by sending a shliach without specifying to him a particular woman to be makadish. So therefore, in a normal case, when a man is makadish, a woman, no problem. We're not going to penalize him. He didn't do anything wrong. But a case like this, where he sent a shliach, and he was careless in doing so, because he should have told the shliach, be makadish for me a particular woman, then we are going to penalize him and say, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that he's not going to be able to get married, because what if in the future a woman that he wants to marry is the mother or the sister or what have you of this woman. And then Tosfos also adds, now the Gemara soon is going to point out the point that a woman is considered more kavua. One of the major concepts that we have when it comes to dinim of sfeikus is the concept of kavua. It comes up in ksubas. It comes up in a number of places throughout Shas. One point is we have ordinarily we go according to Torah al pi roi. We go according to the majority, but you have something called kavua. When something is fixed in its place, then we say that it's actually that we consider, even though statistically it may be only a minority, we consider as though it was 50-50. The classic case of it that it talks about, for example, in Ksubas and in other places, it actually comes from a Mishnah in, I think, Masechta Maaser Sheni or something. But anyway, you have a situation. Suppose you have a town where you have 10 butcher shops. 9 of them sell kosher meat. 1 of them sells non-kosher meat. And you go into one of the stores and you buy meat, and now you're not sure which one you went into. So even though statistically you would say it's a 90% chance that it's kosher meat, because 9 out of 10. But lahalacha, since all the stores are kavua, they're all fixed in their place, then we say no. Lahalacha, we consider it a 50-50 chance that the piece of meat you're holding is a piece from the tradeh, the store, and therefore it's also. As opposed to, for example, the Mishnah goes on to say over there, if you found on the street in such a city a package of meat, then you could say statistically it's kosher meat because 9 out of the 10 stores that could have come from a kosher. We have to be talking about a place where there's no other meat that could have been imported from anywhere else. So, we're talking about, let's say, a town in the middle of nowhere where realistically any meat that you find in the city is going to come from the butcher shops there in town. But anyway, then you would say that you go according to the roi, but not when it's kavua. However, Tosfos points out over here, that's only when you have something where you can recognize that there's an iser. So you can say, to begin with, you can look and say, this is also, this is mutter. Here, to begin with, you don't know, you have no reason to know that any particular woman was already miskadish, therefore there's no problem with you being miskadish one, and in this case, over here of the shliach, it's only an isur dirabanan, it's only a penalty dirabanan, because he acted carelessly by sending a shliach. Now that's a point to Tosfos. Different Rishonim discuss the ins and outs of that. There are Rishonim who disagree with that concept, and so I think that Ramban in particular disagrees with that concept and says that maybe it would be an Issur D'oraisa, in this case where he sent a Shliach. There is a very interesting point, by the way. There's an interesting vote they say on this. I don't remember the marker of it that says that in the Haggadah Shal Pesach we talk about Lavan. We say that Tara only made a zera against the males, but Lavan wanted to uproot everything. Where do we find that Lavan wanted to uproot the entire Jewish people? Even when he chased after Yaakov, he himself says, which is usually how we explain it, still, I mean, he says to Yaakov, the children, the daughters are my daughters, the sons are my grandsons, etc. I can't possibly harm them. So what are we talking about? So they give an interesting explanation that relates to our Gemara over here. Back a generation earlier, when Eliezer was sent as a shliach to the Mekadesh, a wife for Rivka, for Yitzchak, So he was Makadish Rivka. So now what happened was, that Basuel and Lavan tried to poison him. What would have happened in the end? The Malach switched the plates, Basuel died. What would have happened if their plot had succeeded? Eliezer would have died. So then Yitzchak would be in the situation of our Gemara over here. He sent a shliach to be Makadish from a woman. Now he can't marry any woman because she might be his Arusa's sister or daughter or what have you. And the vote is also that Rivka herself wouldn't have bothered coming because at that point she would have been, Eliezer came just in time when she turned 3 years old. If she had stayed any longer with her family, she would have just assimilated among them. She wouldn't have wanted to. She wouldn't have been like this. This was the last opportunity to get her out of there before she was sunk into their trauma. So therefore, so that in that sense, Lavan Vikash Laker Sakurl, in the sense he wanted to prevent the Jewish people from ever coming into existence. So now in our Gemara then, so there's this explanation that this relates to our Gemara, because had Eliezer died, then Yitzchak would have been in that situation.
Why don't we just ask the Edim to come, or ask the shliach to come and testify to Beis Din instead of making such a...
The shliach's dead, and we have no idea who the Edom were or who the woman was or anything, so how is the shaleach supposed to find out? He sent the shliach with an open-ended instructions, go be Makadish a woman. He doesn't know which woman, he doesn't know whether the guy was even Makadish, and if he was, which woman or who the Edom are, he doesn't know anything. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that therefore he's also to marry anybody. So the Gemara says,
so what would be the procedure if the Shliach didn't die? They would convoke Beis Din? I mean, Beis Din would ask him to testify?
The Shliach can come and tell them. What do you mean? Then the Shliach can come and tell them. I was Makadish Pointus.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Eisfei Reshlokish L'Rav Yechanan. So Reshlokish asks Rav Yechanan, so you're telling me then, essentially, that you have a situation, you have some woman out there who conceivably is Mekudesh to the Meshaleach, and we're saying because of that, the Meshaleach can't marry any woman who might conceivably be her daughter or her sister or what have you. Rabbah further on is going to explain that fine, if you have any woman who can't possibly be her mother or her sister or her daughter or what have you, then he would be able to marry her. Fine, we'll get to that soon, but right now, let's stick with what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that the basic fact that he's saying that in this case, you have to be Miss Suffolk. Any woman out there might be her sister or her mother or what have you. So Rav Shlokish says, we have a case in a Mishnah in Kinnin. Masechta Kinim deals with the Kinim, a kin literally means a nest, but it's the term we use for a pair of birds that are brought as a kohen. And you have it's a short Masechta, but it packs a punch because it's very complicated about different cases where birds of korbanos get mixed up. So the Mishnah describes over there, Kane Stork. Now you have like this, when you buy a pair of birds for a korban, there's two possibilities. You can, and you have the cases where you bring two birds for a korban, a chatas and an ola. You have, for example, a woman who gave birth, the pasuk describes in Parshas Tazria, if she's poor, then she brings two birds as a korban. A zog, for example, at the end of his zivos, if he had three times zivor or more, brings a korban of two birds, a zog of dola also. There's a few cases where a person has to bring two birds as a korban. Anyway, so now you have like this. When you buy, there's two possibilities. You can, when you first buy the birds, you can designate this one's going to be the chatos, this one's going to be the ola. That kind of thing is called kain before reshes, is an explicitly stated kain. Or you can have, you just leave it open for now. You just say, right now I'm buying these two birds. I'm not having yet decided yet which one is which. That kind of thing is called kain struma, an unspecified pair of birds. Then when you give that, at that point, then the din would be, when you give them to the kohen, then the kohen can decide on the spot, I'll use this one for the chatas and this one for the oil. So now, the Mishnah says, kain stuma, suppose you have an unspecified pair of birds, shaporcha gozel echaman la'avra olam, one bird flew off from the nest, from the pair, out into the world, so now you only have one bird left. Or the bird flew in to a group of birds that are chatois hamesis. You have a number of cases that are halacha l'moshe nisinai, where you have an animal or a bird that was supposed to be brought for a chatas and can't be brought as a chatas for one reason or another. You have officially five such cases. And in those cases, halacha l'moshe nisinai tells us that those animals or those birds have to be left to die. You lock them up in a room, basically, and eventually they die in there. So now, suppose that one of the birds flew into that group. You can't bring it as a chatas anymore because it's mixed up with ones that are not meant to, that can't be brought as a chatas for whatever reason. The owner of those birds died, or he already used a different bird for his korban, whatever. There are five different cases. Or another possibility is of the two birds that you bought, one of them died. So in all those cases, yikach zug l'sheni. In all cases, no problem. Because it was a kain stuma, you can just buy a second one and designate it. And you just can just buy a second one. You don't need to designate it as anything because neither one has been designated yet as chatas or ola. The Rosh and Tosfos point out, it is true that you would have a similar din. The Gemara over here is going to infer from that there's a different din with kain mefurashes. The fact is that with a kain mefurashes, you might have the same case also. You could talk about, if you have a kain mefurashes, so you would say, for example, if the one that you designated as an ola flew away, then fine, you buy a new one and designate it as an ola. Or the same thing, the chatas. The Mishnah doesn't bother with that because that would be too long. So therefore, the Mishnah just keeps it brief by saying it wants to just say that one of them flew away or any of these cases, and therefore it speaks of kain stuma. But in fact, you could conceivably have the same thing with the kain mefurashes if you know which one it is that flew away.
If it flew into a room full of regular birds that aren't the ones that have chatas,
misses, then you wouldn't have such a problem. Well, so then that's the same as la'avra or olam. You still can't identify it, so you still can't. First of all, it was a kain stuma. I mean, if those birds are heftier birds, then it's no big deal. You take one of those birds and you make
that,
it yours.
That's the whole fetish. So you could take taking a bird that wasn't part of the original.
Well, that's what we're going to ask. In other words, no. The chiddush is not that. What the Shlokish is going to ask on Rabbi Yochanan is that if it flew off out into the world, so now someplace in the wild you have a bird that belonged to Rachel, who was supposed to be bringing it after she gave birth or something. Now, if later on Leah catches that bird and wants to use it for her korban, how can she do that? It belongs to Rachel. It was already designated as Rachel's korban. So that's going to be the problem. That's the point that Rosh Lakish is going to bring up. So if you have, for example, that if it flew into a room of birds, so it depends. If those birds belong to somebody, then fine. You'd have to buy the bird from him. Fine, as long as he didn't designate it as a korban, it's not a big deal. But the problem might be later on if the owner of those birds wants to use a different bird over there as a korban for himself or herself, that might be a problem. But fine, the original owner is not in such a bad state. We're not talking about the original owner. The original owner can have other problems, maybe, if it was a kain mefurashes. But if it's a kain stuma, the original owner gets off easy. All they need to do is get another bird. The problem is going to be that how can we now use any bird that we find, which might conceivably be that one that was previously already designated as korban on behalf of Rachel, and now somebody else is going to use it as their korban. The Rosh, by the way, makes a point also that usually you would tend to recognize the birds only when they're together. When they're together, it's easy to recognize which one is which. But when they're separated, then it becomes harder to remember which one is which. So that's another reason the Rosh says why the Mishnah speaks of Kain Stoma, because if it's a Kain before Reshes, it might be harder once one of them flew away to remember which one is the one that's left, whether it's the Chatas or the Oil. But in fact, if you do recognize it, then fine. Same thing. You buy another one and you designate it as the one that flew away. Anyway, the ilu kain mefureshes ein lechakana. Now the implication seems to be that if it was a kain mefureshes, if you had specified which one was the ola and which one was the chatas, and one of them flew away, ein lechakana, then there's no way of fixing it up because you don't know which one it was that flew away. So what are you going to do now? You're going to get a new bird and designate it as an ola. What if the one that's left is also the ola? Now you have two olas and you have no chatas. And the same, and vice versa, if you're going to designate the new one as a chatas. So, in fact, Mefor should point out the Tosfos Yom Tov in particular points out that maybe that line doesn't belong over here in the Gemara, because that's not the main point the Gemara is trying to get at. The point is, we're trying to focus on what happens as far as that bird that flew away.
So, let's say you just forget which one is which.
If you forgot which one is which, then you also have problems. Assume it's a Kain Mefureshes, then you also have a problem. Yeah, then in fact also Ein Lechakana. Yeah, that's among the cases that it deals with in the Shai's Kinim, or such cases where you got mixed up and you forgot which one is which. Yeah. The Ilu Shai Kinim Ba'alma. Now the implication is that any other pair of birds in the world that you would catch mitaknon is fine. You have a way of you're good. You get any two birds and you designate one as an Ola and one as a Hatas, and you're good. Ba'amai, now the Shlokish asks Rabbi Yochanan, why? Based on what you're saying, the same way as you said with the women, that any woman that you're Makadish in the future might conceivably be the mother or the sister or what have you of your Arusa, the same way over here, this bird that you're catching and want to use as your korban may have already been designated as Rochel's korban. So lema kol chadu v'chadu d'yomahayinu, any bird that you catch conceivably could be the one that flew away from the Kain Stoma. So how can we say that it's good and you can use it automatically? After all, we know there's the din. You have a concept in halacha that whenever you're obligated to bring a korban, it has to be from cholin. So you can have, for example, let's say, for example, a person is obligated to bring a korban chagiga every Yom Tov. So now they can't say, well, I already have an animal that I already previously designated as a shlomim, so I'll make it do double duty as my chagiga. Can't do that. It's already designated as a shlomim. You have to bring a different korban that belongs to you right now. The same way over here, you need to bring two birds, one is an Ola, one is a Chatas. They both have to belong to you. They can't already be belong to Hekdesh. And if Rachel designated them for Hekdesh, she designated them as Korbanos, and one of them flew away, then now when you find it, you have no idea that this bird was ever Hekdesh. But the fact is that it is. So how can you use it now as a Korban? Based on your Rabbi Yochanan and Svara, that shouldn't work. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers, Kamina ano isha b'loi naida. There's a big difference. I'm talking about a woman who doesn't move around as much. After all, she has a house. She lives in her house. So therefore, basically, she's kavua. Fine. She's not completely kavua, but nevertheless, it's a little bit like kavua. So therefore, we have reason to be machner. The mafurish, by the way, that's printed where Rashi usually is, and we said at the beginning of the Masechta, it seems to not be from Rashi. Some say it's from the Rivon, some say it's from other Rishonim, whatever, anyway. But he says another point. Also, a woman is considered more kavua in the sense, the loy naida, in the sense we say, kol kvoda vas malach pnima, the honor of the woman, the tnias to kaita of the woman, is to stay at home. So mostly she stays at home. So therefore, so that's a big difference. For Amrit the Af and Surah Denayid, you're talking about an issue of birds where they're constantly moving around. They have no fixed place to live. So there's a big difference. By the birds, you can't get by the birds. There's no reason, there's less reason to be machmer than there would be by a woman. The Chitema Hochanami Nayid. Now you can say a woman, after all, does move around. That she doesn't stay in the house the whole time. After all, Ema B'Shuka Ashtach V'Kaddish. After all, conceivably you could say Emu B'Shuka Ashtach V'Kaddish. Conceivably you could have the Shliach may have met a woman in the suite and was Makadisher. And then she's not Kavua in the suite. Nevertheless, at least then she eventually returns to her place of rest. She does have a house that eventually she returns to. But by a bird, does it ever return? A bird has no fixed place to live. It makes its nests wherever. So you have less reason to think that any particular bird that you find could conceivably be a bird that at one time was designated as a korban and then flew away. By a woman, you have to be more machmir. So again, like Tosfos said before, maybe the whole chumrah that we're saying over here is only dirabanan because we penalize the mishaleach for acting carelessly. And again, you have rishonim who disagree with that and say maybe it would actually be on a daraisa level. But still, the difference is that there you have kavua to deal with, whereas by a bird, you know. So now that we've successfully defended what Rabbi Yochanan says. Now, Rava is going to point out a detail within that, and once we have Rava's point, then we're going to bring in our Mishnah and show that our Mishnah seems to contradict Rava. So, Amar Rava, Umoide Rav Yechanan. Now, Rav Yechanan would agree, Be'isha she'eva loyd bas, if the Mishaleach wants to be Mekadesh a woman, and he finds a woman who has no daughter, and we don't mean that she has no daughter now, because no chidush. The point is that we're going to say is, that when he appointed the shliach, this woman that this woman did not have any of these relatives who conceivably could be Osir, who conceivably could be the woman who was Mekodesh. So she has no daughter that's unmarried. V'loy bas bas, she doesn't have a daughter of a daughter. V'loy bas bein, or a daughter of a son. All of those would be arayas. When you Mekodesh a woman, then all of those become arayas to you daraisa. Veloy aim, and she doesn't have a living mother or an unmarried mother. Veloy aim, or a mother's mother. Veloy ochis, or a sister. So we can either have, she didn't have those at the time, or that she had them, but they were married at the time. So therefore, that would not be a problem. But apapisha hoisa la ochis, viniskausha la achamikan, even if she had a sister or any of these other relatives who was married at the time, viniskausha la achamikan, and then she was divorced later on after he appointed and sent off the shliach, then there's no problem that maybe the shliach was Makadish, this sister. In other words, you could say like this. Tosfos gives the example. Let's say he appointed the shliach, Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Now, suppose that this sister, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, was still married, but then later on, Nissan was divorced. Do we have reason to be concerned that maybe the shliach was Mekadesh the sister, and now, therefore, now you want to go and be Mekadesh a woman who conceivably might be her sister? No, you don't have to worry about it, because at the time, or the other way around, rather, you, the Mishaleach, can now be Mekadesh the sister who was married on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you appointed the shliach, and now is divorced. Because now you can marry her sister now. There's no problem that she might have been the one that you're shliach in the Kaddish. And therefore, here, let's give them names. So you have Rachel was still married to Chodesh Nissan. Later on in Nissan, Rachel got divorced. Now, you appointed a shliach for Chodesh Nissan. When Rachel, you didn't know, but Rachel was still married at the time. Now, later in Nissan, Rachel gets divorced. You now want to go and be Mekadesh. Leah. You want to be Mekadesh Rachel. The question is there the possibility that maybe the Shliach was Mekadesh, you want to be Mekadesh Leah. Is there the possibility that maybe the Shliach was Mekadesh Rachel after she got divorced? And then you would be also to marry Leah. The answer is no, you don't have to be concerned about that. Since Rachel was married at the time that you appointed the shliach, then therefore, as Rava is going to go on to say, you're only appointing a shliach for something that you could have done at that time. Since you couldn't have been Mekadesh Rachel at that time, she was still married, therefore there's no possibility that the shliach was Mekadesh Rachel. In other words, if he did, then he did it without your authorization. Then he's not doing it as your shliach. So therefore, there's no problem, then you'd be able to marry Leah. And the same thing with all the other relatives. Dahi Sharia, such a woman then would be mutter. Rava is saying even Rabbi Yochanan would agree to that. So in the case we were talking before about Yitzchak and Eliezer, Hypothetically, yes, if Yitzchak were to find a woman who her sister, who she has only one sister who was married at the time, let's say, and then she doesn't have any mother, and she doesn't have any daughter or whatever, then yeah, hypothetically, he could marry her. So maybe even Lovins and Basil's plot wouldn't work 100%, but it would make it, very unlikely. Anyway. By the way, Mephoshim point out that even though now you also have the Gemara and Yevamos tells us a whole list of Shnias La'arayas. You have, besides the Arayas Da'araisa, you have a whole bunch of women who are also to a person Dirabanan. For example, basically what the Chachamim did is they took the list of Arayas from the Torah and extended them outward in various directions. For example, Da'araisa, when you marry a woman, her mother and her mother's mother become also to you. And the Dirabanan, also her mother's mother's mother, becomes also to you. And various other ones also. You have different other ones that you extend out in different directions. Yeah. Anyway. So those we're not concerned about over here, because since, especially like Tosfos is saying, the whole possibility over here is really only a Knas Dirabanan, then we're not going to extend it that far. And anyway, we say Sofik Dirabanan Lakula, that when you have a doubt in something Dirabanan, then you can be lenient on it, so therefore we have less to worry about as far as the Shnius. But as long as you didn't have that one of the actual Arayas, this is actually here. The Shitim Kibetzis brings this from Rabbeinu Azriel. So there's something from Rabbeinu Azriel. So yeah. Anyway. So Shnius, we don't have to worry about. We just have to worry about the Arayas Da'araisa. So again, as long as all of those Arayas were married at the time, were married or never existed, you know, you could have a woman who has no sisters, or died before when he appointed the Shliach, then we're good. So let's say
Shnius, like the woman herself is not nemanis to say, they're just.
Unmarried. So that's the thing. So we said before that Rabbeinu Tam says a woman herself is believed to say Lonis Kadashni, that I wasn't the Kurdish. But the problem is that over here it's not the woman herself, it's her sister or her mother or what have you. She may not know, yeah. But besides that, anyway, there are Rishonim who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam on that and say, listen, we have a concept called Ein Dovah Sheva Erva Pachas Mishnayim. When you need testimony about the matters of Arayas, you need two witnesses. A person's statement on their own is not necessarily enough. But anyway, again, here we're talking about relatives, so it's even less likely, yeah. So the point is, Rava is saying that, yeah, so if she had a sister who was married and then later on divorced, that he's Sharia. And then nevertheless, her sister would in fact be mutter for you to marry. My time, why is that? Because at the time when the when the Mishaleach sent the Shliach, have a Misiva Magabri, at that point, this woman, Rochel, was married to a man. So therefore, we would say, Ki Meshavei Shliach, when a person appoints a Shliach, the Milsa de Kaima Kameh. It can only be regarding something that the Mimosa Kaima Kameh, only in a matter that stands before him, in other words, something that is possible to accomplish right now. The Mimosa Delay Kaima Kameh, something that cannot be accomplished right now, Loi Meshavi Shliach, a person cannot or does not appoint a Shliach to do that. So in other words, if on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, when he appointed this Mishliach, Rochel at the time was still married, then therefore, automatically, she is not included in him saying to the Shliach, go be Mekadosh me a woman. So now there's no possibility that he was Mekadosh Rochel, and therefore now, if Leah is her only sister, then we're good. Then the Mishliach can marry Leah. Or not just her only sister, whatever. If she has no other sisters, if all her other sisters were married at the time, I'll say, then that would work. So now the Gemara is going to bring from our Mishnah to contradict Rava on this, which is why we have the Sugya here in Nazir. But Tosfos points out like this. Tosfos has an interesting discussion over here. First of all, Tosfos says the word my timer, which means why is that? First, Tosfos says it's not really a question so much why is that, it's more what's the scenario. And Tosfos says, Loshen Nozir Mishuna, the same way as in Nidorim, the Rishonim say Nidorim many times, the wording in it is unusual compared to the rest of Shas, so it is in Nozir, and for much the same reasons, that Nozir, it seems, didn't go through the final editing that many other Masechtas did. When we started Nidorim, we talked about a few different reasons that Achronim give why that is so. One point is, we find in writings from the times of the Gaon, we find in Chuvas from the Gaonim, that they stopped at some point in the Yeshivas of Bavel, they stopped learning Nedarim and Nozir. They didn't learn them regularly because they were concerned people are going to then realize that there's too many loopholes in Nedarim, and people in that time were very careless about saying Nedarim casually, and therefore the Gaonim did not want people to learn about all these possible loopholes in them. So therefore they stopped learning them in the Yeshivas. So one possibility is that therefore these Masechtas were mostly learned in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore when people copied them out, remember this is hundreds of years before printing, then people tended to copy them out using the Lushan, the dialect of Aramaic that they used in Eretz Yisrael, which is somewhat different than the dialect of Bavel. So that could be one reason. The Tiferes Yisrael gives a reason because the Tiferes Yisrael gives a reason. He says, we find in the Gemara in Bava Basra that Rav Ashi edited the entire Gemara twice. He was Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years. They would go through two Masechtas a year in the Yarchi Kala. So therefore, in 30 years, he went through the entire Shas, and then he started again. He was Rosh Hashiva for about 56 years. So the Tiferes Yisrael says maybe there was a number of Masechtas besides for Nedarim and Nozir. There's a few others, Be'ilah and Chrisus, and a couple of others that also seem to be unfinished. Maybe Rav Ashi did not have the opportunity to do the second round on those.
There's 60 Masechtas?
There's 63 Masechtas in Shas, the way we have it, but some of them maybe were originally larger Masechtas that we then split apart. For example, the Gemara tells us that the three Babas were originally one Masechta. For example, it's argued that maybe Maestris and Maestris Sheni originally constituted one big Masechta, and there's a couple of others they talk about. So that's another possible reason. But whatever the case, the point is, the Rishonim say, that's how it is. Nedarim and Nozir are their Loshen is Meshunah. Sometimes the language in them is a little unusual compared to the rest of Shas. Anyway, then Tosfos goes on to say that maybe the Mai Timer could mean exactly what it usually means. Why is it? We know what the scenario is, but why is it that this would work? On the face of it, don't we have the same suffix? And the reason is because when a person makes a Shliach, it can only be for something that can actually happen right now. Now, Tosfos brings up then a lumdish point, which many, many Achronim deal with different angles on this. In that case then, what happens, Tosfos says, Maisim b'chol yoyim. It happens all the time, and you have Talmudim, people learn this in Cheder even, that a woman, for example, will say to her friend, here's some flour, please make for me a batch of dough and take challah from it. Now, how can you appoint somebody else to take challah when the dough hasn't been made yet? Based on what we're saying over here in the Gemara, you can't appoint a shliach for something that can't be done right now, where you can't separate challah until the dough has been made. So how can you designate a shliach in advance for Afroshes challah? So first Tosfos wins. First the Menatam says the reason is because conceivably the first woman could bring a dough that's already made and say that this dough should, that from this dough I'm going to take challah on behalf of the flour, looking ahead to when that flour is made into dough. So therefore, it's called dvarim shebiyodei. When something is biyodei, when something is in a person's capability of making it happen, then it's not considered that it doesn't exist yet. So here in Or Gemara, we're talking about, for example, Rochel is married and Rosh Chodesh Nissen, and Meshaleach has no ability to affect that. So therefore, we can say that at the time, then his grant of permission to the Meshaleach, be Makadish from your woman, cannot include her. But on the other hand, here, when it comes to this case of the flour, a woman, conceivably, she could easily make up another batch of dough and take challah from that on behalf of the flour in the future. So therefore, it's considered biyadoi, and therefore, it's not considered gover shaloi baloi. There are different Rishonim talk about different angles on that. Does it have to be that she actually has other flour available right now that she could? Is it enough that, for example, maybe there's flour available in the store to buy, that she could conceivably go and buy flour and make a new batch of dough of it? Anyway, then Tosfos goes on to say that maybe that's not such a solid reason. and then brings from a Gemara in Yevamos that bears on this. Anyway, different Achronim talk about what exactly does Tosfos conclude. Is it that Tosfos is in fact saying that there is a problem? How could it work? On the face of it, though, Tosfos is trying to justify the Minhag. So an answer that Achronim give, and they base it on other Rishonim as well, is maybe it works not on the grounds of Shlichus, but on the grounds of what's called Gilui Das. The person is expressing clearly their intention that they want challah to be taken. So here in our Gemara, we're talking about actual shlichos. You need to be an actual shliach to be able to be mekadesh a woman for somebody. But maybe in the case of challah, gilui das, the fact that you make it clear with your statement that you want the other person to take challah, maybe that's good enough.
Even can somebody take challah off of, like, challah they don't own?
So if they don't own it, then well, not if they made them a shliach, yes. But what we're saying is maybe in that case the shlichus works on the grounds of gilui das, on the grounds that you're telling them, you're expressing to them that I want you to be my shliach for the future as well, and therefore it would work even if we don't say the matter of that the dough is beyond it. An interesting nafkamina that comes out of this also is as far as mechiras chametz. When you sell your chametz to the rav and in turn he turns around and sells it to the goy. So can you include in that chometz that you don't own yet? What if you buy chometz afterwards? So Achronim discussed that in some detail. Now, one answer is that maybe it works. And some Tzedek talks in the Tshuva, for example, the whole concept of mechiras chometz works. One way of understanding it works on the ground of zochin la'odim shalei b'fanav, that the you can do a zchus for a person even when he's not present. We know the yid wants to sell his chometz because he wanted to be over on having chometz in his possession. So therefore, maybe it can work even beyond the normal dinim of shlichus. But they do say that for that reason, it may be advisable to not buy chametz, to not buy more chametz that's eventually going to be sold together with the chametz after you executed the sale with the rav, unless maybe conceivably you should inform him afterwards if you do. Or maybe, so what they often do is in the document where you write out to the rav, you actually mention over there explicitly that I'm also including any chametz that I'm going to buy. So in that case, then that could work also. But the whole thing, there's a tremendous amount of lumdus on this one Tosfos over here, discussing many ins and outs at this point. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So now, the Gemara says Tzna. So now let's look at our Mishnah and see whether it fits with what Rava is saying. The Mishnah described, Hareni Nazir, suppose that Reuven says, I'll be a Nazir, but Olai Legaleach Nazir, and also I'm obligating myself to sponsor the Korbanos of a Nazir. I'm going to pay for the Korbanos of a Nazir. Besides myself, besides that I have to bring my own Korbanos for Nazirus, I'm also pledging that I'm going to sponsor somebody else's. The Shama Chavere, his friend here, is V'Omar, and the friend says, V'Ani, and I, which we learned yesterday means that I will also be a Nazir, V'Ola L'Galeach Nazir, and also I'm obligating myself to sponsor the Korbanos of a Nazir. So we said, Im Hoyu Pitchid, the Mishnah had said, if these two people are smart, Megalchin Zeh, then they sponsor each other's Korbanos, and that way neither one is having to lay out more money. You imagine, let's say the Korbanos costs $300, let's say $100 per animal. So like this, if you didn't do that, you'd have to be paying $300 for your own Korbanos, as well as $300 for some strangers. Like this, instead, what are you doing? You're paying $300 for Reuven is paying $300 for Shimon's Korbanos. Shimon is paying $300 for Reuven's Korbanos. So therefore, neither one loses out anything. So now, in Vim Lab, and if they don't realize that, Megalchim is Zirah Acherim, then they sponsor other people's Korbanos. Now, let's consider what the Gemara says. Bishlema Basra, I understand when Shimon says that I pledge to sponsor somebody's Korbanos, fine, Ika Kadmar Kameh. At that point, Reuven has already become a Nazir, so therefore, when he says, V'ola L'Galeach Nazir, he can include in that pledge, anybody who is a Nazir right now. The Gemara is assuming that the person, based on what Rava is saying, you're going to include only somebody who is already a Nazir right now. The same way as Rava is saying that when you're sending the Shliach, you're only including a woman who you could conceivably be Mekadesh right now. Well, then when Shimon becomes a Nazir, Reuven's already a Nazir, so therefore he can be Yotze by sponsoring Reuven's Korbanos. But how is Reuven able to be Yotze sponsoring Shimon's Korbanos when he said, V'olei v'galeach Nazir, Shimon wasn't a Nazir yet at the time. So how can it work? When he said, I pledge to sponsor the Korbanos of a Nazir, doesn't that mean, based on Rava's Svara, means somebody who is a Nazir already, and Shimon is not yet? The Gemara answers, Ela Hochikam. No, you have to understand that when Reuven says that, what he means is not that it has to be somebody who is a Nazir right now. He just means, imashkachna to have a nazir. If I find anybody who is a nazir, whether he is a nazir right now or whether he's a nazir by the time that I'm ready to do that, agalche, then I will shave him, meaning that I will sponsor his kavanos. Well, then on the face of it, hochanami. Well, wouldn't it be the same thing with the shliach? Kika amale, hochika amale. Shouldn't we assume that he's telling the shliach, imashkachas di migarisha, if you find any woman who's divorced, kaddishli, then be makaddish for me. So she might have been married when you appointed him, but by the time he gets to the other place, a week or two has passed, and she's already divorced. Based on Rava's Svara, we should say we don't have to worry about that, but if we understand the Mishnah, that Reuven is saying whoever happens to be a Nazir at the time, I'll sponsor his Karbonus, then the same thing with the Shliach. Whoever's divorced at the time, you can be Makadish. So how would Rava's rule work? The answer is Amri. They answer, Loi Meshavi Inish Shliach Elam Milsa Demotzi Ovid Hashta. The answer is that a person appoints a Shliach only for something that he could do right now. So in other words, we're saying a little differently than before. Before we said something that exists right now. Now we're saying not so much that it exists, but something that a person is capable of doing right now. The milsa de leimotzi ovid lehashta, something that a person is not capable of doing right now, loy meshavi, he cannot appoint a shliach for that. So it may mean, again, that he doesn't have it in mind, but the Rosh learns that actually what it would mean is not even that he may have it in mind, but he doesn't have the ability to include that in his shlichus because he doesn't have the ability to do the thing at the time. The rule is going to be now, you can appoint a shliach only for something that you have the capability of doing right now, and since you don't have the capability of being makadish, this woman, because at the time she's still married, then therefore, even if you are telling the shliach, I want you to find any woman, and I don't care what her status was at the time, it's not going to work, you don't have the ability to appoint a shliach to accomplish such a thing. It's similar to me, makna dover shaloi bala olam, the Rosh compares it to. Loy Vashavi, he wouldn't appoint a shliach, and therefore, so therefore, there's no problem that she may have gotten divorced later because she can't be included as shlichus as of now. So the Gemara says, Veloy. So you're telling me that no, you're telling me a person cannot make a shliach for something that he can't actually accomplish right now. Toshma, let's try to bring a proof from a braisa that we learned in the Nedarim. Now, the last two prakim of Nedarim talked extensively about the fact the Torah tells us that a father has the right to cancel his wife's Nedarim, and a husband has a right to cancel his wife's Nedarim. So a braisa described over there, ha'oimel apotrupas shaloi, if a person says to his trustee, so a person has an apotrupas, a trustee who's in charge of running his household matters, so he tells him, So now the husband is going to be going out of town. So he says to the apotropos, any nedarim that my wife makes, mikan, from here, meaning from when I leave this place, ad sheovim mimakom ploni, until I come back from such and such a place, so all of those things, I want you, hofer law, I want you, the apotropos, to be mefer, to cancel, to veto on my behalf, the hefer law, and the apotropos does in fact do that, Yochol Yehu Mufarin, you would think that those Nedarim are in fact cancelled, and now she's not obligated them anymore. No, Tamad Loima, therefore the Pasuk says, Ishah Yikimenu v'Ishah Yiferenu. The Pasuk says her husband can uphold her Nedarim, meaning that he can confirm, good, this is a good Nedar and I approve of it, or he can be the one to be made for it. It divered of Yoshia, so the Yoshia says, since the Pasuk says, Xeris HaKosev, that only the husband can, nobody else. Reb Yonason says you don't even need that. Matsinu b'chol mokum sheshlocha shaladim kamoisei. Oh no, Reb Yochanan says, on the contrary, the apotropos could be made for to her, because matsinu b'chol mokum we always find sheshlocha shaladim kamoisei. So the husband can appoint a shliach to accomplish this. So now, let's consider that braisa and see whether that fits with what we said. Now let's stick with Reb Yoshia's opinion to begin with. Even according to Reb Yoshia, in theory, an apotropos ilav hochi, if it weren't for the pasuk isha yikmenu v'isha yifrenu, apotropos maker, then Reb Yoshia would have said that the apotropos can cancel the nedarim only because of the gzeiros hakosav. He says otherwise. And Tosfos and the Rosh point out, in fact, the Gemara could be asking the question according to Reb Yonason as well. According to Reb Yonason, the question is even stronger, that according to him, the apotropos can be made for the Nedarim. But the Gemara is asking basically according to both of them. that we seem to be saying that the apotropos should have the right to be made for the nedarim. According to Rabbi Yeshia, in practice he doesn't, but not because of the dinim of shlichus, but just because exeris hakosim, because the pasuk says so. Now, the ilu gabed yidei, Tanya. Now, when it comes to the husband himself, on the other hand, we learn in a braisa, so it's not really a braisa, it's actually a mishnah over there. If a husband says to his wife, before he goes out of town, so there you're talking about he doesn't have an apotropos, he himself is going out of town, and he says, if he says, any nedarim that you make from when I leave here until I come back from that place, yuhu kayomin, those nedarim should be upheld, loy omaklum, then what he says doesn't count for anything, meaning, in other words, because, and the reason is basically because the nedarim don't exist yet, so you can't uphold yet something that doesn't exist.
But if he says nothing, then they're established.
If he says nothing, then they're established, but it has to be on the day that he hears it. So now he didn't hear it because he's out of town at the time.
If he doesn't hear it, then they're not coming.
Then what happens is the clock does not start ticking until he hears them. On the day that he hears them, he has till Shkia of that day to be made for them, and if not, then they're not mufer. But if not, then they're kayim. But like this, when he's out of town, the clock hasn't started ticking yet. And the point is also, we talked about there in Nedarim that the husband at any time can say kayim lich, that I approve of these nedarim, and after saying that, he can't be made for them anymore, even though it's still the same day. In effect, there was a Ran over there who said the expression that in effect what happens was, as soon as he says kayim lich, in effect it's as if it's the end of the day already. It's as if the day is over, and now he can't be made for it anymore. But we're saying that if he wants to be Mekayim in advance before the neder was ever made, it doesn't work because he can't be Mekayim something that doesn't exist. It's again like Dovah Shalom B'Lo'olam. But, continues the Mishnah, Harehen Mufarin, what if he says in advance, I'm Mefer all the Dorim that you make in advance? Rabbi Eliezer Oyma Mufar. Rabbi Eliezer says he could do that. And he makes a kavachomer over there because he says that you can be made for a neder that already exists. How much more so you can be made for a neder that's weaker that doesn't even exist yet? For the chum say you cannot be made for because the neder doesn't exist yet. And the Gemara explains over there because they learned from a hekesh and psukim over there the same word that we just said. Isha yitimenu, isha yiferenu, teach us that the rules that apply to hafara and the rules that apply to hakama to a certain extent have to be identical. So therefore, since hakama you can't do in advance, you can't be mekayim something that doesn't exist. Therefore, the chum say you can't be made for that something that doesn't exist either. Anyway. The point is, so let's focus on Rabbi Yoshi's opinion. Kasapadaigach, we're assuming for purposes of the question, ki omer Rabbi Yoshia, that when Rabbi Yoshia is saying this din, that the apotropos cannot be mefer, aliva de rabbanon, and he's following the opinion of the chachamim, da ami loy motzi mefer. They're saying that the husband himself can't be mefer under those conditions because she hasn't made the nedarim yet. So therefore, so in other words, what are we talking about? He appointed a shliach. At the time he appointed the shliach, he, the husband, couldn't yet be made for those nedarim because they don't exist. And now, though, and Rabbi Yoshi is saying, only because of the Xeris HaKosu can the apotropos not be made for them, implying otherwise the apotropos could have. And again, according to Rabbi Yonasan, the question would be even stronger. According to Rabbi Yonasan, the apotropos could be made for them. So isn't that similar to the case where the husband, where a man appoints a shliach, give him a kaddish, a woman for him, and at the time he appointed the shliach, a particular woman was unavailable because she was married, and now she's no longer married, and Rava had said she's not included, but based on what we're saying over here, it sounds like she should be included. So Rabbi Yoshi is saying, according to the Chachamim, Da'amin loy motzi mefer, they're saying the husband cannot be mefer for future nedarim. And the Rosh points out that actually, if Rabbi Yoshi was going according to Rabbi Eliezer, then the Gemara is saying that there would be no need to appoint an apotropos. He himself could do it in advance, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Before he leaves town, he could just as well do it himself. He'd have no reason to tell a shliach to do it. Now, if it hadn't been for the words of the pasuk that it says that the husband has to be the one to be mekayim or the one to be mefer, apotropos have a maker, then according to Rav Yoshia, the apotropos could accomplish it. So in that case, then that contradicts what we just said. We have a case there where the husband at the time can't accomplish it, but later on, the apotropos the apotropos in theory could do it, except that there's a Xeris HaKosov that says not, and according to the Yonis and not even, he doesn't even accept the Xeris HaKosov, and therefore he says the apotropos could do it. So there you have an example. You yourself can't do it at the time, but you can appoint a shliach that when it becomes possible to do it, you do it. Well, wouldn't that be the same thing by the Kedushin then? At the time, on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you can't be Makadish this woman because she's still married, but by the time your shliach gets to her, she's no longer married, and according to Rava's rule, there should be no problem later on marrying her sister because he couldn't have been Makadish her. But based on what Rav Yoshi and Rav Yerkeson are saying, it seems that shouldn't be so. It seems that even though you couldn't have been Makadish her at the time, but as long as the shliach is able to be Makadish her at the time when he reaches her, then she's included, potentially.
When we say that, people don't make shluchim on things that don't exist yet. Are we saying that it's impossible to make?
So that's the thing. First, the Gemara had said the expression that something that's not kaima kame, something that doesn't stand in front of him, in other words, something that's possible to accomplish, then he doesn't appoint the shliach. Now, then we said that doesn't work based on our Mishnah, so we changed it. We said that a person cannot appoint a shliach unless it's something that he could do now. In other words, from the dinim of shlichus, part of the dinim of shlichus is that if you can't accomplish it now, then you can't appoint a shliach to do it later on. So now the question is, based on this matter of Hafaras and Garim, where it seems that according to both Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonis, and you could. Rabbi Yoshia is saying in practice you can't because of Xeris HaKosov, but other than that, you would have been, from the point of view of the dinim of Shlichos, you would have been able to. And according to Rabbi Yonis, you are in fact able to. So how does that fit with what we just said?
The husband's ability to be made for his wife's neder even in advance, is that a similar thing to...
Well, that's what we're saying. Neder doesn't exist yet. Well, this woman doesn't exist yet as far as Kedushin because she's already married.
I'm saying if you say that you can't make a shliach on something that doesn't exist, would that mean that you can't be made for a neder if something doesn't exist yet?
Well, that's what we're saying. He himself, the husband himself, can't be made for a neder that doesn't exist. On the face of it, according to Rava's rule, that means he also can't appoint a shliach to be made for that neder even later on when the neder comes into effect. But now we're saying that on the face of it,
he himself can't. Does that also show something?
That's what we're saying, that he can't. Therefore, on the face of it, according to Rava's rule, he can't appoint a shliach to do that. That's exactly what we're asking. We're saying that he himself can't do it because the neder doesn't exist. Therefore, he also can't appoint a shliach to do it, even though by the time the shliach is going to exercise his shlichus, the neder is already going to exist.
Oh.
That's exactly parallel to the case where you're appointing a shliach to be Makadish, a woman, and at the time she was unavailable for kedushin because she was already married. But by the time the shliach reaches her, she's no longer married.
Right.
Yeah. So the Gemara answers back. So who says that what Rav Yoshia is saying is according to the Chachamim? The Duma Libet Rav Eliezer. Maybe in fact Rav Yoshia is speaking within Rav Eliezer's opinion. Drama Motzi Mefer. Where Rav Eliezer, after all, says the husband could be Mefer at the time. Very well then, the husband can be Mefer. Therefore, he also has the ability to appoint a shliach to be Mefer later on. Well, the Gemara asks, Yehochi Lomalev the Shavuya Shliach. Well, then why would he bother appointing a shliach? Leifa Laihu. He could just do it himself. The answer is kasavar, because the husband may not do that because he may figure it's better that I do that rather than I say it right before I leave town, because duma mishtalina, I might forget because I'm too busy getting ready to leaving for my trip and I may forget about it. Or I might be angry and not be in a mood to be made for nedarim right then. Or I might be otherwise occupied, preoccupied, and not be able to. So therefore, better let me appoint a shliach a day or two earlier, and then the shliach will accomplish it at the time. So in other words, if we're saying now, according to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, then no, it doesn't contradict Rava at all, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, the husband does have the ability to be made for these nedarim at the time. The nedarim don't exist yet. Rabbi Eliezer doesn't care about that. So yes, the husband could do it. So therefore, he can appoint a shliach to do it. Practically speaking, he does that because he's figuring that he may be preoccupied or whatever and not have the time and not have the presence of mind to do it right before he leaves. And therefore, practically, he appoints a shliach. But it's true, Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonason's opinions may not be according to the Chachamim at all. Because according to the Chachamim, there'd be nothing to talk about. Since the husband can't be made for nedarim that don't exist yet, then he certainly can't. There's not even anything to talk about appointing a shliach to do it. So Tosfos asks then, still, fine, but why doesn't he do it now? So fine, what is he saying? A day or two before he leaves on the trip, he's going to appoint a shliach. well, a day, and he's going to tell him in advance, any nedarim that my wife makes while I'm away, I want you to be maker. So why don't he do the same thing? A day or two before his trip, when he's still calm and collected and he's not angry or anything, let him say to his wife, any nedarim that you make from when I leave on the trip until I come back should be mufer as of now.
It's also hard to imagine a case where she's not around, or it's just more practical to tell someone else. Like,
I mean, maybe because we're assuming the wife is around the house more, but again, especially
if he's not there, I don't know, it just takes time. Like, if I have the ability to take care of something now.
Right, well, that's what Tosfos was asking. Why does he need, still, according to Rabbi Eliezer, why does he need a shliach for it? He himself, a day or two beforehand, the same way as he's able to tell a shliach a day or two in advance, the same way he himself could do this a day or two in advance. So Tosfos answers like this. He only wants to be made for nedarim that are gonna happen after he leaves. He doesn't want to automatically pre-cancel nedarim that take place before he leaves. Because Tosfos says Shazek Tas Kosha, it's a little bit difficult, meaning maybe, in other words, it would be too hard on her. The fact is, she wants to be able to make the nedarim, and she doesn't automatically want her husband to pre-cancel all of them. So in fact, Tosfos goes on to say that now even with this matter of the apotropos, so that's the thing. In other words, Tosfos says that he's afraid that it's gonna cause friction between him and his wife if he tells her flat out, any nedarim that you make from when I leave town till I come back, I've automatically made for them in advance. Then she's gonna think that her husband doesn't trust her. Like this, in other words, after all, when she makes any individual neder, her husband can hear it and decide at the time, you know what, I approve of this neder or I disapprove of this neder. To make a blanket statement like that, anything you say while I'm away, I automatically pre-disapprove of, is going to cause friction between them, Tosfos says. So therefore, he doesn't want to do that. Therefore, he figures better to have an apotropos do it. Tosfos also goes on.
So the Torah says afaras neder. Afaras neder means exactly what it says, which is the cancellation of a neder that exists. Why do you say that pre-cancellation is afaras neder when it's not?
Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, it is. We learned in Nedarim that Rabbi Eliezer makes a Kavah Chaim.
Well,
he says, a neder that already exists but is stronger, you can cancel. How much more so a neder that doesn't exist yet? That's how Rabbi Eliezer learns. So that's how he learns. So,
where does he take it from?
That's what we're saying. He takes it from that Kavah Chaim. The Chachamim disagree, and we had a whole sugya, a whole complicated sugya over there explaining how the Chachamim can say that, where on the face of it we have proofs from other cases in Halacha where it seems that, the other way around. We said the Chachamim brought proofs against Rabbi Eliezer from other areas in Halacha where we see that doing something in advance, that doing something proactively like that doesn't work. We said as far as Tumah V'Tahara, for example, but still Rabbi Eliezer pointed out that still those cases are not exactly analogous to this, and therefore he can still stick to his opinion. Anyway, Tosfos mentioned.
But we never really explored the basis for Rabbi Eliezer's argumentation.
We had a whole complicated sugya on it, on Nedarim Dafayin Hey and Bob thereabouts. Yeah, we did. We discussed it extensively.
We had a sugya, but we never. Well, I asked you the question at the time, and you didn't answer it.
I did answer it. That was the answer. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer is making this Kavah Chomer.
But where does he have the basis to do it?
Because a Kavah Chomer.
Where did he take it from the Torah?
Because a Kavah Chomer, you don't need. Your Kavah Chomer is a Adam Don Kavah Chomer Me'atzme. A person can come up with a Kavah Chomer on his own. He doesn't need a textual source for it. As long as the Kavah Chomer is well founded and there's no Pircha to it, then it's a valid Kavah Chomer and you can learn halachas from it. So the Chachamim say we have a Pircha to it. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with those Pirchas on various grounds. Anyway, Tosfos also points out over here, though, that the fact is that for the hafara to work, again, the husband has to hear the neder. The clock doesn't start ticking on hafara until the husband hears the neder. So what it would mean really is that if we're going to make an apotropos over here to do it, it would mean that he's saying that the hafara will make the hafara when the husband comes home and hears the neder. Then that's when the hafara will take effect. In that case, Tosfos says, then in that case, all Gemara also has another meaning to it. When he was saying that the husband's saying, I may be distracted or whatever, he doesn't mean before the trip. He means when I come back from the trip. When I come back and I hear all the nedarim that my wife made, and now, having heard it, the clock starts ticking, on that day I might be preoccupied, right, or I might be angry, or I might be this or that, or whatever, and not have the presence of mind to be made for. Anyway, so the point the Gemara has made though is that Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan are not necessarily talking within the view of the Chachamim. It's true, according to the Chachamim, the Hafara may not work, not because a Shliach can't do it, but for a different reason, not because Hafara has to be done through the husband, like Rabbi Yoshia says, but rather for a whole different reason, because you can't appoint a Shliach for something that you yourself can't accomplish at the time. You yourself can't accomplish Hafara because the Neder doesn't exist yet, and according to the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer, therefore you don't have the ability to be pre-Mefer, and therefore you can't appoint a Shliach to do it either. But within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, you can have Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan discuss their respective opinions. So therefore, so we don't have any contradiction against Rabba, and Rabba's din remains upheld, that in fact the rule is you can't appoint a shliach for something that's impossible for you to do right now, and that's where we have that whole lumdus from Tosfos before about a frosha shchala, where ultimately, where again, one answer was that you could actually be makir shchala right now, because you could make up another batch of dough and be makir from it. Or variation that a number of Rishonim say that maybe it's good enough that you have the capability of going to the store, let's say, and buying some flour or some dough or whatever. So therefore it's all a matter of biyada. And then there's another point that Tosfos says that some Achronim learn in Tosfos that the vote is maybe not because of that, but rather because you have Gilui Das. You're making it clear, you're making it very clear that you want the person to be able to separate Chala on your behalf, however, whatever mechanism and Halacha is needed for that to work. Okay. Mishnah says, suppose a person says, so now in the previous Mishnah we had, where Reuven and Shimon each say that I obligate myself to sponsor the Korbanos of the Nazir, the Galeach Nazir. Now we have a variation of that. The Mishnah says, suppose that a person says, Harei alai le Galeach Chatzi Nazir, I obligate myself to sponsor the Korbanos, to sponsor half of a Nazir. And his friend hears and says, and I obligate myself to sponsor half of a nazir. So what happens? Rameir says each one of them is going to have to sponsor the korbanos of a full nazir. Because, as we're going to see in the Gemara, Rameir holds that chatzi nazir amounts to saying half of a nazir, and there's no such thing. You can't have half of a nazir, it's all or nothing. No such thing as half nazirus. So therefore, the mayor says, means each of them is going to be responsible to sponsor the korbanos of an entire nazir. The Chum say, no, zemagaleh chatzin nazir, but zemagaleh chatzin nazir, each one can sponsor half the value of the korbanos of a nazir, and therefore that's that. So now, on the face of it, Tosfos says, the same machloikus would also be, even if you only had one person. In the previous Mishnah, we had to have two people saying it because we were discussing what does Va'ani mean and what happens if they each pledge to sponsor the Korbanos of a Nazir and what the Pitkin can do. Here, for purposes of our din, really, on the face of it, you only need one person to say. Machlokas would be, Reuven says, Allah the Galech, Chatzin Nazir, is he responsible for all the Korbanos only half of it? On the other hand, the Shittim Kobetsis brings, the Shittim Kobetsis brings, I think again from Avinu Azriel, that says, that maybe not actually. Maybe if only one person says it, then maybe in fact you would say that he has to tackle bring the whole thing. It's not Rabbeinu Azriel actually. It's the Rosh. The Shittim Kobetsis brings from the Rosh actually that says that no. The point is, if the chiddush would be rather like this. If there was only one person, then there's less of a chiddush, according to Reb Meir, that you have to sponsor the whole thing. But when you have two people, each one says a half, maybe Reb Meir should say, well, look, between the two of them, you have one whole one, therefore maybe that should be good enough, and still Reb Meir says that that's not good enough. The Mefarish over here actually says that no, if there was taka only one person who said, Ola the Galeach Chatzi Nazir, then everybody would agree he has to bring complete korbanos. Only when you have two people, then you would have the machlokas, the mayor and the chachamim, does the second person fill in what the first person said, what the first person is lacking, or not? Anyway, so the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Hakol Moedim. Now everybody, both the mayor and the Chachamim would agree, Kolei Chadama Chatsi Korbanos Nazir Alai, if he said, half of the korbanos of a nazir are an obligation on me. Well, then clearly the word chatsi refers to the korbanos. So then no problem, chatsi korin maisi. Then he brings only half the korbanos, and everybody agrees with that, even Remeir. On the other hand, if he says korbanos chatsi nazir alai, if he says the korbanos of half of a nazir are on me, then kula korban bo yisuya, then everybody would agree he has to bring all of the korbanos. My time, adolai ashkham nazirus kapalga. There's no such thing as a half nazir. So when he says korbanos chatsi nazir, to say chatsi nazir means a half of a nazir, but there's no such thing as a half of a nazir. A nazir is an all or nothing deal. So therefore, so then even the chachamim would agree that the word chatsi refers clearly to the nazir, and therefore it means that half a nazir, and then it becomes the whole thing. So the machloikas is strictly when the person uses the exact wording of the Mishnah, where he says, Allah la galayach katsi nazir. Rameir sovar. So now, Rameir holds, kiven to omer hare olai. What happens is, when he says hare olai, there is an obligation on me, ichayev akule korban nazirus. At that point, he becomes chayev in all of the korbanos of the nazirus. V'chi ka'omah chatzi nazirus. So now, when he says half of nazirus, lav kol kamine, then he doesn't have the ability to undo what he said. Tosfos explains, we would say, according to the mayor, tfois loshen rishon. We're going to grab on to the first loshen that he said, harei alai legaleach, which constitutes a statement that he is going to sponsor korbanos. Legaleach means to shave, and it means to sponsor the korbanos. So when he says that, now when he adds chatzi nazir, then the mayor is going to say, too late. He already said, harei alai legaleach, and therefore he becomes chayiv in the entire thing. The Rabbanan Savi, was the Chachamim hold, neder pesach imayhu. This is a case of a neder that has a pesach with it, which means, in other words, that he's clarifying with the second statement, he's clarifying what he meant. How much am I going to be megaleach? Half of the korbanos of a nazir, not the entire korbanos. So it's similar to the machlokas we had the Shama Vesilo about Nuni Nozman Agrogris Men Adbela. There actually we also mentioned the mayor's opinion, but here it's a little bit different. There the question was, is the person accepting the zeros on himself? He was not accepting the zeros on himself. He's just making a neder that I'm going to sponsor somebody's pro bonus. So it's not a matter.
The idea is to split the phrase in half.
Right, so that's the question. Do we split the phrase in half? So the mayor is going to say, tfois loshen rishon, we grab onto the first loshen that he said, and therefore that's it. It's also true, Tosfos says that if you were to say, hare olai chatsi nazir, then fine. The question is Tosfos says like this. Why are we saying that when, as soon as he says olai, he's chayiv in all of it? Why don't we just say that it's similar to saying korbanos chatsi nazirus? In other words, why don't we just say the mayor holds that hare olai legaleach chatsi nazir is like saying, I'm obligated for korbanos to say legaleach chatsi nazir should be like korbanos chatsi nazir, where we said the mayor says therefore, and even the chachamim agree that then you can't. There's no such thing as a half nazir, and the chachamim would be comparing it to chatsi korbanos nazir alai. So why do we need to say that the mayor is saying tfois loshen rishon? Why don't we say that each of them draws an analogy with a similar loshen? So the answer is, Tosfos says, because the whole point is that the word chatsi in our Mishnah is referring to the olai. He's saying, hare olai legaleach chatsi nazir. So therefore, the olai, the chatsi goes together with the word olai. So now the question is, well, does it in fact go together? Rameir says yes. Rameir says no. We split them apart. And the Chachamim say yes. There are other Mephoshim will point out that also the words hare olai by itself doesn't constitute any kind of neder. There has to be that he says hare olai to do something. Yeah. So when he says legaleach, that is when the mayor is saying that then at that point, hare legaleach is a complete statement. Then at that point, if he's going to say chatsi nazir, then it's too late for him to change the statement.
There no other like instance of tibahas? Like that it could refer to?
Well, hare olai legaleach, what would it mean? In other words, is he going to say that I'm obligating myself to shave? I mean, if he meant a shavur, then I'm going to shave. He would say so. He would say something like shavur, shagaleach, or something like that. Hare Olai is an expression that you use when you're pledging karbanos. So, and then, and the galeach automatically you mean, and there's no other karbanos that are involved with shaving except for the karbanos of a nazir. Okay. So actually what it is the, So what it is the Raivad and a couple of other, Rishonim explain, in other words, that, yeah, it boils down to that, No, actually, that's something else. Never mind. Yeah. Okay. Good. Shukriya, everyone.